Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, July 1st, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Federal judge issues restraining order for seven trans Idaho citizens against a new state law prohibiting Medicaid for adults receiving necessary gender-affirming care. Native American group decries what they call firing of Idaho's Indian Education Coordinator, who works for the Department of Education. We'll hear more from Democratic Representative Elena Rubel of Boise from the Democratic State Convention, which was held a little more than a week ago, and the U.S. Supreme Court decision allowing municipalities to outlaw homelessness may impact Spokane and Clarkston. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A federal judge has temporarily blocked a new Idaho law that prohibits the use of Medicaid money for gender-affirming care for adults. The decision Saturday by Federal District of Idaho Chief Magistrate Judge Raymond Patricio to issue a temporary restraining order only applies to seven transgender and non-binary Idahoans at this point. The law took effect today. This comes in a state where a new law makes it a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison for doctors to perform necessary gender-affirming care on minors, even care that follows accepted standards of care. The U.S. Supreme Court allowed that law to take effect in April, but blocked it for the families of trans teens in Idaho that filed the lawsuit. All but one of the Republican state legislators voted in favor of House Bill 668, which would require the state Medicaid department to apply bigoted standards to people's health care, even adults who seek gender-affirming care. Bill supporters said they voted for the bill so taxpayer dollars would not be used inappropriately. Here's House sponsor Republican Representative Julianne Young of Blackfoot, who has since lost her primary election.
This is about whether we're going to use public funds to provide highly controversial, potentially medically harmful, and irreversible medical procedures and surgeries, which in some cases result in sterility and lifelong sexual dysfunction. I'm just going to walk you real quick through the bill. The guts of the bill are subsection 2. Public funds shall not be used, granted, paid, or distributed to any entity, organization, or individual for the provision or subsidy of any surgical operation or medical intervention for the purposes of altering the appearance of an individual in order to affirm the individual's perception of the individual's sex in a way that is inconsistent with the individual's biological sex, regardless of whether the surgical operation or medical intervention is administered to a minor or an adult. And then there's an important phrase there, except for the exempted surgical operations or medical interventions.
Opponents testified in the legislature this year as House Bill 668 made its way through that gender-affirming care is both medically necessary and safe, and there likely would be a discrimination lawsuit against the state if they passed the law. There were other arguments made against the law in legislative committees, including this exchange between Democratic Senator Melissa Wintrow of Boise and Representative Young on March 14th.
Medicare covers penile implants for erectile dysfunction. And so I would say that would be directly related to gender-affirming care for men, virility, those kind of things. And so I got to thinking, would these kind of things be implicated as well?
Representative Young.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wintrow, that seems to me like it would not fall under this legislation, because this legislation is specifically speaking to treatments that are provided for the purpose of affirming an individual's perception of an individual's sex in a way that is inconsistent with the individual's biological sex.
Judge Patricio's temporary restraining order expires Monday, July 15th. Attorneys for the plaintiff said Idaho Medicaid already had an unwritten policy of denying or delaying gender-affirming care coverage. A lawyer representing the plaintiffs, Idaho Legal Aid Services Associate Director Howard Belladoff, told the Idaho Capital Sun in an email Sunday, the plaintiffs already have had their gender-affirming care stopped, so the order was a relief for them, but it is only temporary and does not prevent others who are not named in the case from being harmed while the case continues and the court makes a ruling. Belladoff said he cannot truly express how the plaintiffs in the case feel. He said it is no different than other minorities who have a history of being subjected to state-sponsored and sanctioned discrimination. Judge Patricio wrote in his decision to grant the temporary restraining order, quote, House Bill 668 effectively memorializes and implements the previously unwritten Medicaid exclusion policy by prohibiting the use of public funds for any gender-affirming care to treat gender dysphoria. House Bill 668 co-sponsor Republican Representative Bruce Skog of Nampa told the Idaho Capital Sun, I remain confident the final judicial opinions will uphold the Idaho statute after all arguments have been weighed. In an interview with the news outlet last week, Skog claimed gender-affirming care is controversial and the bill passed by a wide margin in the legislature, quote, because we do not want our tax dollars being used for this controversial procedure. That's the purpose, and I think that purpose is going to have the desired effect immediately. The Indigenous Idaho Alliance released a statement last week saying officials fired the state's longtime Indian Education Coordinator, Johanna Jones, whose last day at the Idaho Department of Education was June 13th. The Alliance calls Jones' leaving a reprehensible firing. The State Department of Education says it was not a firing. The Indigenous Idaho Alliance press release says, we feel this is a targeted disgrace of a vaunted educator. It does not bode well that in a time when programs that help not only Native American Indigenous people in education, but also bridges the cultural education gap with other communities in Idaho, are under attack, that the Idaho Department of Education has moved to replace one of the most respected and staunchest supporters of Native Americans in education in the state of Idaho. Education Department spokesperson Scott Graff told the Idaho Education News in an email, leaders decided to change the Indian Education Coordinator position to a director position with an expansion of duties and responsibilities. Graff said the Education Department advertised for the director position in the spring and interviewed candidates. Graff wrote, ultimately, the process did not yield a successful hire. The position has been re-advertised and we are actively recruiting candidates. Graff said the new director position came about as a direct result of Superintendent of Public Instruction Debbie Critchfield's interaction with tribes over the last year and a half. Graff wrote, because the Education Department did not hire anyone to fill the position, state officials, stakeholders, and tribal members decided together to cancel this year's annual Indian Education Summit, scheduled for early August. Graff said this year's summit could be rescheduled depending on the timeline for hiring a new Indian Education Director, but in any case, the Education Department plans to continue hosting the summit in future years. Superintendent Critchfield's Chief of Staff Greg Wilson will serve as the Indian Education Interim Director until the Education Department fills the position. Earlier this year, University of Idaho Professor Vanessa Anthony Stevens told the State Board of Education, every batch of education data shows Native American students are experiencing disparities in Idaho's K-12 schools, and the problem is urgent. Idaho financial officials say the state may start its fiscal year today without a budget surplus for the first time in years. The Idaho Division of Financial Management's new administrator, Lori Wolf, told the Idaho Capital Sun last week it's too early to tell what the state's budget balance will be for fiscal year 2024. Officials released the state's monthly revenue report for May on June 20th, which showed revenue was $35 million below projections. Wolf said, "Do we need to be nervous? Not necessarily. Where June looks so far, June is looking pretty good so far." Wolf said the state has $1.3 billion in its rainy day savings accounts, which is about 22% of the state's general fund budget. Wolf said, "These reserves, along with a healthy balance of $200 million on the bottom line, ensures Idaho has a structurally balanced budget to weather revenue misses or economic changes."
A new poll shows Idahoans support the development of more clean energy in the state. 500 likely Idaho voters were surveyed in February. Jillian Hansen with the Nature Conservancy in Idaho says clean energy was a winning issue in this poll.
64% of Idahoans agree we can both increase the production of clean energy while preserving natural areas, wildlife habitat, and the character of our communities.
Hansen notes that 64% of participants in the survey also agree that clean energy is economically beneficial for communities, bringing lower energy prices and jobs. The poll was conducted by GS Strategy Group on behalf of the Nature Conservancy in Idaho. Hansen says proper planning is integral to clean energy production. Last year, the Nature Conservancy released its Power of Place report. It lays out how renewable energy can be developed while still preserving natural and working lands. Hansen says the report shows this is possible, and that one important element is getting local residents involved.
In all of this planning conversation, too, robust community engagement is very important. From the outset, engagement that prioritizes community benefits and responds to community concerns.
Hansen also notes that clean energy can have economic benefits and low impacts on nature at the same time.
Clean energy technologies can provide reliable energy to communities at a marginal cost increase, and it can also create economic opportunities, like in the form of jobs, U.S. manufacturing, and more.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by SkyGlow Solar, offering solar power systems installations on the Palouse and surrounding region. Information at skyglowsolar.com or contact Brian Ogle at 208-310-4545.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
Listen to radio.
You've got it right.
Listen, listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, and you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio.
It's 90.3 on your radio dial.
Fight Back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening and listening and listening.
Fight back.
We're still here.
Radio.
Still here.
Fight
back.
Fight
back.
Fight
back.
Fight back.
Fight
back.
You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. The U.S. Supreme Court's decision Friday allowing municipalities to outlaw homelessness could have an impact on the homeless situations in Spokane and Clarkston. The ruling basically threw out a previous Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling in a case involving the city of Boise that said cities and local governments cannot enforce their anti-camping and anti-sleeping ordinances if there is not enough shelter beds in the community. The case itself was from Grants Pass, Oregon, where city leaders decided to enforce the city's no camping ordinance, even though the small city had only one homeless shelter with limited space. Voters in Spokane last year approved a Republican-backed anti-camping ordinance that prohibits camping within 1,000 feet of schools, playgrounds, and daycares. Opponents said the camping ban is so wide that it will send homeless people out of the downtown area where they are near services and into the neighborhoods. The ban covers about two-thirds of the city of Spokane's area, not including the airport, and there were questions about whether it would withstand a court challenge because of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision in Martin versus the City of Boise. That decision said full camping bans, when there is no room in shelters, amount to cruel and unusual punishment and the criminalization of homelessness. Friday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling seems to bolster claims that the ordinance is constitutional. In Clarkston, the city government has enacted a camping ordinance that only allows people to sleep in a single city park between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. During other times, tents and possessions must be removed. That park is Foster Park. Attorney John Wolf, who represents several homeless Clarkston residents in a lawsuit against the city, told the Lewiston Tribune, to the extent that the U.S. Supreme Court's decision has any impact on the case, it only implicates one of the claims. My clients have brought several claims against the city of Clarkston. The claims include a federal and state constitutional right to travel, which would include the right not to travel, a state constitutional right against cruel punishment, and state and federal prohibitions against the deprivation of due process and the seizure of property without due process, as well as violations of the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act. Wolf told the Lewiston Tribune last week he had not yet talked to the city attorney about any changes that might come in Clarkston as a result of the U.S. Supreme Court ruling.
The high cost of child care in Washington can strain family budgets. It can be even harder when families are experiencing homelessness. A statewide call center is helping people find care and a way to afford it. BrightSpark Early Learning Services operates the Child Care Aware of Washington Family Center, which fields calls from families. The center also has homeless navigation services. Erica Washington with BrightSpark says staff ensure they understand each family's needs.
Does your little one have any special needs? And we're able to really pinpoint programs that meet each family's unique needs. This offers families some stability and just knowing that we're on their side, we have their back, and we are also understanding of some of the challenges that they may face.
Washington says the call center is able to connect families with state child care subsidies like Working Connections or through the homelessness grace period. The center also provides follow-up services after 30, 60, and 120 days. Washington talks about one family BrightSpark was able to help that moved to Washington and ended up needing housing. The family had one school-age child and two kids under the age of five. Washington says they connected the family with a child care program that understood how to support families experiencing homelessness.
So when transportation became an issue or when hours of operation became an issue, this child care provider was able to really support this family's needs and really become more of like a family or support system for that parent.
Washington says the center wants to uplift families' voices and let them know how they can take action. She says they support enough families experiencing homelessness to understand their needs.
A lot of times the families who are experiencing homelessness are working evening hours or weekend hours, and that's a big challenge across our state of being able to find a child care program that's available during those hours. And so it's something that we hear time and time again, and we often are providing support, but that need continues to be there.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
We now return to Idaho state politics. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox interviewed Idaho House Minority Leader Democrat Elena Rubel at the Democratic State Convention in Moscow the weekend of June 22nd. Here's that interview.
So the Republican Party got together with their and developed their platform last weekend, and it was quite terrifying, and the public needs to be very aware of what's in there. I made a short video with 10 things you need to know. Honestly, I could have put in 20 things. There were a lot of pretty kooky things I eliminated just to get it to 10.
Go ahead. We like kooky, too.
Well, some of the ones I didn't even include were, you know, ending all absentee voting and, you know, shutting down ballot initiatives and all sorts of wild stuff. But some of the things that I think are going to be of great interest to people in this area were defunding all public education. So stopping all public funding of University of Idaho, North Idaho College, Lewis and Clark State College, BSU, ISU, you name it. And that's pretty shocking. You know, it would basically cause people's tuition, I think, to triple if there's no state funding going into it. It would put higher education completely out of reach for thousands of people across Idaho. They also called for ending the launch grants, which are the $8,000 grants that all that 10,000 Idaho kids are going to get to pursue in-demand professions, to become engineers and nurses and welders and you name it. Mm-hmm. So the effect on our future and on young people and on our workforce is staggering. I think it would make Idaho a much less appealing place for companies to want to come. So that's just one item. Another interesting piece they had in there was they call for ending of funding of anything that isn't constitutionally required. Now, Idaho's constitution doesn't require much. It only requires that you fund first grade through 12th grade education and prisons. So basically what they're saying is no funding for police, no funding for any emergency services, no funding for foster care, roads, bridges. I mean, really any of the vital services that people count on, they're saying should be defunded, which is kind of ironic. After all, they're saying, oh, Democrats want to defund the police. Democrats do not want to defund the police, but the Republicans literally just put defunding the police in their platform. So those are just a couple of the things. Social issues, wow, they really doubled down and said absolutely no exceptions on their abortion ban, no rape exception, no incest exception, no health of the woman exception, and they went further and want to ban IVF, in vitro fertilization, that is often the only avenue for families that are struggling with fertility. So that was pretty shocking. It really just goes on and on, but people need to know this. Mm-hmm. Another really important thing that they need to know is, you know, once upon a time, party platforms just kind of lived on the website and nobody did anything about it and you didn't really have to follow it. It was just a thing that happened to be there on a website. Mm-hmm. That is very different from where we are right now. Right now, they will hold your feet to the fire, and if you are a Republican and you don't follow that platform to the letter, they will haul you into a tribunal, they will censure you, punish you, work to get you unelected, and we saw a lot of Republicans actually lost their primaries because they didn't follow the Republican Party platform to the letter. And this platform, I think, is wildly out of step with what most Idahoans want, but they are going to bludgeon every Republican legislator to follow this, and I think they will. I think they saw what happened to people who don't follow it, and they think, well, this may be kooky, but I better follow it. And, you know, it's one of them is ending same-sex marriage. That's another one that might be of interest to people here who have loved ones or might be in a same-sex relationship themselves. They call not only for banning same-sex marriage in Idaho, but for defying any federal court order or law that calls for the legalization of same-sex marriage. So this really, this platform just calls for the crushing of anybody who doesn't fall into, you know, the very, very traditional male-female family model.
Mm-hmm. Anything more that you'd like to add?
Well, I guess I'd like to add that people don't have to go down this route. There's another alternative, and we are just in the process of finalizing our platform right now. But it's kind of the exact opposite of all this. We do believe in supporting universities. We do believe in funding safe roads and bridges. We do believe in funding first responders and police. You know, we do believe in freedom. You know, we do believe that the government should get out of your way and not micromanage your life and not tell you who you can marry and not tell you what books you can read and what medical care you can get. We believe that, you know, government should be there to provide vital services efficiently that we need, things like roads and bridges and police, but otherwise get out of your hair and let you live your private life. Unfortunately, the Democrats, you know, have really been at a disadvantage. We hold, I'm in the House, I'm the House Democratic leader. We have 11 out of 70 seats. It's within the power of the people listening to this radio broadcast that they can change that. Every seat in the legislature is up for election this November. We have Democrats on the ballot in every district in Idaho. And I know it's hard. I know a lot of people have strong cultural affiliations and they think, you know, my family's always voted Republican. That's just what we do. This is not the same Republican Party that your parents probably signed on to. This is a very different Republican Party. I don't think Ronald Reagan could run a precinct race in Idaho right now. He would not be considered right-wing enough for these folks. So I think it's time for people to really re-examine whether it really makes sense to still have those Republican Party affiliations, given the extent to which the Republican Party has jumped the shark and gone off the right cliff. And there's another option. There is a very reasonable, I think, frankly, pretty centrist party out there that will respect your freedoms. We just need people to come out and vote for us. And we can turn the tide and we can make Idaho safe for women again. There's no reason women have to be getting airlifted out of Idaho to get emergency pregnancy care. That's because of the current Republican Party. But we can change that this November, and it is within people's power. They can come out, they can vote, they can fix this and put people in charge who will save our universities and who will make Idaho livable.
Right. And the key to all these issues seems to be Reclaim Idaho's primary initiative. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I don't know that that's the key to all the issues, okay. Because frankly, you know, I think what that's aimed at, and it's a worthy cause, it's to open the primaries, because right now it's a very small sliver of the population that's voting in these closed Republican primaries. It's like the right-wing most 15% who are deciding who those candidates are going to be. And they're the folks who made this platform. They're the folks who want to defund universities, who want to defund roads and bridges, who want to, you know, force you into life-threatening pregnancies against your will. I mean, they're running the show right now. So if you open the primaries, I think you're likely to get somewhat more moderate Republicans coming out of it. I don't, from my perspective, that doesn't really solve the problem in that on, now, some of the more moderate Republicans will believe in funding public schools. That's great. And they'll believe in funding universities. They will still throw us under the bus on every social issue. When it comes to things like attacking the transgender community, attacking the gay community, attacking women's reproductive rights, it's a straight party line vote. There's not a hair's bit of difference between a moderate Republican and an extremist Republican when it comes to every social issue out there. So if you have, you know, people in your life, if you are yourself LGBTQ+, if you are yourself concerned about access to health care and reproductive freedom, the moderate Republicans are not going to help you. They will throw you under the bus every time. Every one of those votes is a straight party line vote, and there's not a bit of daylight between the most far-right Republican and the quote-unquote moderate Republicans. So from my perspective, we need more balance in the legislature. Right now, our legislature is 80, at least in the House, is 84% Republican. Would it be better if they were slightly more moderate Republicans? Sure, but I think it would be a whole hell of a lot more reasonable if we actually had balance, where people had to talk to each other and collaborate and cooperate and compromise and come up with some reasonable middle-of-the-road path. That means electing Democrats. You know, again, having slightly less wild and woolly Republicans, I guess it's an improvement, but it's not going to solve our problems, and it's not going to make this state livable for women, frankly, who want to have kids. It's not going to make this state livable for people in the LGBTQ community and more. And frankly, on voting access, too. I mean, those folks typically will vote to take away your ballot initiative rights. They will vote to seriously restrict your access to the ballot. To me, it is not enough to simply replace all of these super extremist Republicans with slightly more moderate Republicans. We need a balanced legislature.
Right. And people can get that information from going to and reading the GOP platform.
It's right there. I didn't exaggerate a thing. I am very scrupulous on that. I don't exaggerate anything. I don't want to be called out and ever be caught in a lie, ever. I value my credibility tremendously. So I went through word by word and make sure that nothing is there is overstated. It's exactly what's in there. And I got to tell you, I posted my top 10 things about the Republican Party platform, put it out there on Twitter or X or whatever it is now, and many, many Republicans said, yeah, that's our platform and we're proud of it. It was retweeted by David Riley, who's the guy who's, you know, a Nazi sympathizer from North Idaho. And he said, I'm so proud of this platform. This is great. And lots of Republicans acknowledged that, yes, this is their platform. They own it. They're proud of it. They think it's marvelous. So this is, in fact, their platform. This is not anything that I'm exaggerating or fudging. This is the platform. They love it. They're proud of it. And regular, reasonable-minded people need to know this is the platform and need to know they cannot keep giving these folks power. These folks are not serious about governing in a reasonable way. Democrats are, and it is time to really give the Democrats the power to rein this in.
Right. I'm concerned about the Idaho Freedom Foundation grading the Republican people to how well they apparently adhere to the GOP platform. Yeah. And so many of the Republicans are afraid, I think, to be to reach across the table and work in a, you know, work with Democrats.
Yeah. Well, there's effectively been a complete merger of the Idaho Republican Party with the Freedom Foundation. This platform that they just passed is the Idaho Freedom Foundation platform, essentially. The Idaho Freedom Foundation has been talking for a long time about how they don't think there should be any funding going into universities. They've been talking for a long time about how they don't even think there should be public schools, that schools should be privatized. That very much is in line with the pro-voucher views in this platform. This is the IFF platform, and so the IFF score is basically how well you adhere to their ideology, which now is the official Idaho Republican Party platform. And you look at the characters involved, it's the same people. The you know, the president of the Idaho Freedom Foundation's wife is one of the top folks who worked on this platform and who's one of the top officials within the Idaho Republican Party. Dorothy Moon had a perfect score with the IFF. They are essentially the same entity right now. So your Freedom Foundation score grades you on how well you follow the IFF platform, which is the GOP platform. And you're right. Legislators, Republican legislators, are very afraid to be graded poorly on that platform. And frankly, for good reason. We saw what just happened in the closed primaries in May. Pretty much every Republican that showed the guts to stand up to the Freedom Foundation and to vote against some of these, to me, nuttier ideas, got run out of town on a rail. You know, the one Republican legislator who was brave enough to stand up for transgender kids and not go with the anti-trans bill lost his primary. The same with the one senator who was. Basically, the legislators who were willing to stand up for public schools and say, no, I don't want public money going to unaccountable private religious schools and siphoned away from public schools. They were attacked mercilessly. Millions of dollars were spent attacking them, and a lot of them lost their primaries. So the message has gone out to Republican legislators that you better toe the line, you better fall in line with this platform, or they will come get you, and they will knock you out, and it will be the end of your political career. So you can expect a very high degree of allegiance among Republican legislators to this platform. And you can believe, you better believe going forward that they will be voting to defund universities, that they will be voting to do these things, because they know it's the end of their career if they don't. The good news is, Democratic legislators don't have to follow this at all. We are free thinkers. We are in no way, aligned with this Republican platform. We don't feel we have to follow it. We don't follow it. We are completely... feel free to tell them to pound sand and say, no, we are going to fund our universities. We are going to fund our roads and bridges and police. But, you know, we can't express that freedom and vote accordingly unless we're in office. And for that, we need voters.
So get out there and vote.
Get out there and vote this November. I can't think of a time when the stakes were higher. This platform is going to become reality unless people get out there and vote for Democrats. It is all in the hands of voters this November. So get out there, vote, register your friends, drive them to the polls, do whatever it takes. Because you would sure hate, I mean, I don't know if there are students listening to your podcast, your radio show, I'm so sorry. But you would really hate for these students to find that they can't continue their education or that they are unsafe and that they are one of these people who have to be airlifted out of state with a pregnancy that they can't get treated in Idaho. One woman, by the time she got to another state, lost her uterus because the infection had progressed so far it couldn't be treated anymore. Your lives are on the line. Your education is on the line. Your future is on the line. This is no time to say, I don't have time to vote. It's way too critical. So mobilize everybody you can and get out there and vote.
Thank you.
That was Idaho House Minority Leader Elena Rubel of Boise speaking with KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox at the Democratic State Convention in Moscow the weekend of June 22nd.
Today is National Postal Workers Day, a celebration of the job they do to deliver the mail. Postal workers provide a vital service, especially during big election years like 2024 and in states like Oregon where elections are conducted completely by mail. Daniel Cortez is the Oregon Legislative and Political Director for the American Postal Workers Union.
Whether it be America's election mail or letters from grandparents, care packages to our service members overseas, vital prescriptions for our seniors and veterans, it's important to remember that all of that happens because of the dedication of the postal workers day in and day out.
The United States Postal Service began with Benjamin Franklin on July 26, 1775. The Postal Service is currently experiencing a shakeup. Trump-appointed Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is implementing his 10-year Delivering for America plan to modernize the Postal Service's network. It's meant job eliminations and sorting center cuts that Cortez says have hurt mail delivery. For instance, he notes that sorting in Oregon has been consolidated to one center in Portland.
It's imperative that the American people know that this slowdown is manufactured by the Postal Service. Everything from failure to properly staff offices to just deliberately slowing down how fast mail moves.
DeJoy has remained in office under President Joe Biden because only the Postal Board of Governors can oust him. Biden has delayed nominations for the board, also delaying any potential change in leadership in the Postal Service. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear through at least Sunday with A low of 51 tonight, high 76 tomorrow and Wednesday, 83 4th of July, 89 on Friday, and 93 Saturday and Sunday. Lows 50 Tuesday and Wednesday night, 54 Thursday night, and 58 Friday and Saturday night. Winds will be from the west tomorrow, 10 to 15 miles an hour with gusts up to 20. Wednesday, west winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20. And Wednesday night, west winds 5 to 10, becoming light and variable in the evening with gusts up to 20. Currently, 72 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box there that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. And remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived on the KRFP website, and there's also a two-week archive of all the programs broadcast on KRFP, so you don't have to listen while we're broadcasting them, or to the stream, or to the FM. You can listen on demand on the internet. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by C.F. Morrison Guitars at 130 North Grand Avenue in Pullman, providing lessons, repairs, and handmade acoustic and classical guitars. Open Wednesday and Saturday afternoons. Details at cfmorrisonguitars.com. KRFP thanks its donors and sponsors.